whom they call the Vithoba, because Vit means brick, and one who took his stand on the brick is known as Vithoba. That's all.
And they have Vithoba and somebody, Pandurang, why do they call
Pandurang is also is called Pandurang.
What does that mean?
The color, sky color.
Do you know any stories about Chaitanya?
Yes, Chaitanya was also another prophet master of his time in Bengal. I forget now, what was his name? Chaitanya was the name given afterwards, but his name was Gaurang Prabhu. Bengali name. He was the one who started this Bhakti Marg. At one time, you see, people had completely forgotten, because there was one perfect master who only enamored his disciples and the public with all metaphysics that you find in God's speech. Almost, it's because the truth is just the same. So in a different form it was put. So all the Advaita theory means, Advaita means impersonal, absolute God. It was preached, you see, by Shankaracharya and all that. And so then all that aspect of love was lost. So he came and revived that, Gaurang Prabhu. And then you find him, you see, he, of course, revived means that was his duty, it seems to be. So to us it seems to be, to the historians, it seems that, well, he realized and then he formed a way towards the Lord through bhakti, through aspect of love. That's how he did. He then sang and danced on the streets and all that. He'd carry all the villagers. They would all follow him. And naturally, he would lose himself in ecstasy and sing in the beginning. So they would all follow and sing. And they would dance and all. They led a life which was totally abandoned life. You see, they would just forget the world and go on from one street to another street, from one village to another village like that.
You know, we visited Vrindavan, because we have some friends who live there. And it turns out that the friend, they just moved upstairs from us last year in Cambridge, so we didn't really know much about them. Very nice people, young.
Indian,
yeah. And it turns out that, you see, the man is the descendant of, in fact, he's in the heir, like the direct descendant of one of the seven disciples of Chaitanya, called the seven Goswamis.
Goswamis, yeah.
And they, their name is Goswami. And they have a temple, like a family temple. And they told us the story of the image in their temple. And the story is that...
Which place, which city is this?
Vrindavan. Apparently the story... my understanding is that Chaitanya had some kind of vision of Lord Krishna, and he said that this was the spot where he played with the gopis, and this was the spot where this happened, and this was the spot where that happened. And then around that, they built the city of Vrindavan, and now it's a city of temple within the Tathagata. And this one temple was founded by their ancestor, this one Goswami. And then he apparently every day had this black stone that he that comes from the Himalayas or something that he worshipped as a form of Vishnu or something like that. And he would worship it every day and he was very attached to it. And after he was done, he would hang it in a tree in this box. He'd put it in this box and he would hang it from the tree. And one day he woke up and he noticed that the top was off the box and the stone was sticking out. He got very upset because that meant he wouldn't be able to worship the stone today because there was probably a snake or something in it. But then he went closer and he realized there was nothing in there, and he took out the stone and it had taken the shape of the Lord Krishna. And then they supposedly then took that and found
placed
it
there, installed it there as a temple.
And they say that this is the same image that's still present in their temple.
Possible. Anything is possible in this world.
It's a very nice little temple. it seemed to really help a lot of people. And Vrindavan, we really liked Vrindavan. It's a very clean town. And it's a quaint little town.
Yeah.
So, really nice.
He went to Gokul also.
No. Because one of the gopis.
You know, this story reminds me, Judy, of another thing, as this person narrated to you about the stone. What happened? Huh?
She spilled something.
Sprained her arm?
Spilled
something.
Keep the tiny little bit of water. What
is wrong? Is the bone on the same as the tool?
No, it's close by. Mathura, Vrindavan, Gokul. So there's another thing, another episode that took place in Puri. Have you heard the name of Puri? Jagannath Puri?
I think so.
It's on the east coast, near Calcutta. Yeah. So I think Chaitanya was also called Nitai. Did he tell you that?
No.
So there's a temple of Jagannath there in Puri. And the temple is supposed to be, and the statue is of wood.
The statue is of wood?
Timber, yeah. Made out of wood. And every year there is that festival of Jagannath. Jagannath means the Lord of the universe. It is the temple of the Lord of the universe. And it is said that the statue is taken out of the temple every year and taken out on the streets, made to sit in a chariot. And this chariot is such a huge thing. There's no idea. I can't give you an idea of the whole thing. It's just like your pilgrim center, you know. Greater than that, with a couple of stories added to that. Yeah, it's a huge thing. So, and that is on wheels. So, it's led by the human beings. They drag the statue out. And it's a great day for them. And they give the prasad when it is distributed of rice and all that. So there is no caste distinction, no distinction now whatsoever. Now, but there was a time when, in the early years, centuries, people only Brahmins could go there and worship Jagannath. Nobody else was permitted to do that. But it so happened that there was a certain person by name Jayadev, and he, somehow or other, was touched by the love of his Lord, and he sneaked inside the temple and he would worship the Lord with all his love that poured out of his heart. One day he was found out by the Brahmins there, who were the keepers of the temple. And they looked at him and says, "Who are you?" He says, "I'm the slave of my Lord and I come here to worship him." He says, "Get out of this place, lest you're thrown out from here. Get out from here, you've polluted the place and all that." So he says, "But I am just here to worship the Lord." He says, "No, you leave the place." So he left the place. Then again he would come when there would be very few people there and he would sneak inside, or when there would be a crowd, he would sneak inside and then do that. But again he was caught, and then this time he was thrashed. And the people sat in judgment and said that if you ever step inside the temple, which you have already polluted and we have to sanctify it, you will not return home alive. Get out from here. And he was kicked and thrown out of the place. He being a carpenter. Then for first few days, he said that, what can I do if they don't want me? Then from a distance, he would just, from the gates, he would peek inside and have a darshan and be there and offer his love to the Lord and all that. But then that didn't satisfy him. Now what to do? So he got a brainwave. Says, "All that I need is just his feet. I am I'm a beggar of his feet. So what he did, he from a piece of wood, he carved out two legs, hip downwards, just this portion. Mm-hmm. And then he placed in his own hut there. He lived in a place like this, you know, there are adjoining rooms, three or four rooms there. Just one room for himself. He was a bachelor, young man. And he carved that out and put them as if they are the legs of the Lord. So he put them with great reverence and all that. Tried to make his legs more comfortable and all that. He couldn't afford anything, but he did somehow or other. And then he would go out for work, and in the evening when he would come again, he would press the feet, he would bathe them, wash them, anoint them, and do that, and go on, and then talk to him. Whatever his heart prompted him to do, he did it. Others, after some days that had passed by, others started hearing some voices in the neighbors. And the walls are not thick walls. They're just partitions. So they overhear some things. And they are very curious. So what is this young man trying to do? Speaking with whom? These words of love he pours out. To whom? Is there a woman there inside? What is this? So what they did was that they tried to just burrow a hole there and just see that there is some bomb that is there. And he's pressing the feet. And what is it? How could it be? So who could he be? Is a person, man or a woman there? They were intrigued, but they couldn't do anything more. In the meantime, what had happened was that his worship reached such a height that those wooden legs got life in them. They got elasticity in them, and he felt as if he's pressing the Lord's feet. They became elastic. But simultaneously there, the legs that were there in the temple, they started withering from waist downwards. Really, actually, in the beginning nobody noticed it, but gradually when the withering was to a degree where it was noticeable, it was observed, so the priests were aghast seeing these things. Then the news went out to the king of the place, and the king sent out emissaries to find out what's this. Something is wrong somewhere. Why is such a thing happening here? Why only waist downwards it's happening like this? So they scoured the whole town and the neighborhood and all that. They couldn't find the news spread from one place to another. That's what has happened to this. In the meantime, these neighbors were more curious, and they tried to notice and all that. They could see the feet. They could see the legs there of a person, but they didn't know what was beyond the legs. They couldn't see. What is it? So then they put two and two together, see what has happened. So they then spread rumors that there is something inside this room, that there is a man over here. He is talking to a person whom we have not seen, and what's the matter? So naturally, from the government servants were there, they broke open there, and they found that Vijaydev was ministering to the feet of the Lord, and they were as good as life legs. So the news went there back to the king that such a thing has taken place. So then he was brought to the temple, and the priests begged his pardon, and he was installed as the high priest. Yeah. It is recorded like that. And then when he came and started his worship to the Lord there,
then the statue revived again. The feet, the withered feet, legs became alive again. Means Vikya took its original shape.
That statue originally had that life form? No.
Form was life. See, it was made of wood. It is still there.
But I mean, it had that elasticity also?
Yeah. Only the love can breathe in life.
So what did they notice when, let's say, his legs that he made had that life in it? What did they notice was different about that statue of wood in the temple?
They were withering, they became thinner and thinner. All this became thinner and thinner.
But it was just wood.
It was wood, yeah. But then, how does it, have you seen wood withering on it?
Yeah.
Rotting, withering. Yeah. What happened to the legs in the hut? He would want to go. He was very satisfied with his worship there, and I don't want to go.
why? What happened to me? As if there was a spell cast and he couldn't go anywhere. He felt that he is going away. But it would lead to the gate again. How many times it has happened? Then he succumbed to the whole thing. He surrendered himself. And that's how he, of course, eventually realized. That's a different story. But when he passed away,
Sai Baba
passed away. And now Upasana Maharaj was, you may call it, possessed with that divine fire at the time. Nobody could approach him or anything like that. He was fire in spirits. And then gradually calmed down. So soon after he passed away, after say a year, he wanted to celebrate the anniversary of the passing, like Amar Tithi. Yeah. So they went to Kashi. And he took Baba also with him. Nirvan at the time. Nirvan was there. Yeah. To Kashi, Banaras. And why? Well, in order to celebrate the anniversary, naturally what we have to do is, according to the Brahmin system, the rites and rituals are to be performed of the dead. So it was not the dead, it was the eternal. Sai Baba was there. So what to do now? But he had to observe it, he had to celebrate the anniversary. So what he thought was doing was that Baba was the financier also. Money was there. Baba was having shops there at the time. Nirvan, well, at the time with Maharaj. So money was there. There was nothing wrong with that. So what Maharaj said, that what we'll do is, we'll have a great feast, Bhandara. It's known as Bhandara. Where, naturally, people are fed. Whosoever comes is fed. So they cooked on in big cauldrons, all rice and dal and vegetables and all that. And then what happened is that they had to call Brahmins. So this food can only be first, just as you offer to the deity, you know, that Namdev story I said. So likewise, it is to be first offered to the Brahmins. So the Brahmins were made to sit in a row and all that. And then the Brahmins noticed that there were many people in that, because Maharaj was cosmopolitan. There were, first of all, this Nirvan was there, you see, yeah. So he, somebody asked, who has cooked this food and who prepared this, all this? So we prepared it. So who is he? They pointed out at Nirvan. So spontaneously they said, well, his name is Jagannath. So that's how I am remembering the story of Jagannath.
Who said that?
Sadashiv Patil and others who were there, you know, Yashwantrao and all. And Maharaj was there.
That's
Jagannath. Yeah. He's Jagannath.
But just as a name or as a reference as Lord of the Universe?
It's just that. It's just that.
They wanted to pass him off.
Yeah, pass him off. Just as Ali Akbar Aloba.
Yeah.
So like Jagannath.
Oh, nice.
Jagannath, yeah, Baba. So then what happened? These Brahmins took objections to this, that the food has been touched by these non-Brahmins. And how can we eat? We won't eat, we won't touch. And Maharaj lost his temper. And he literally drove them out through stones and all that, and drove these people out and called others untouchables and all them to eat. So it is not in your, you are not blessed for these things. Get out from here. I tried my best to get you inside this, but you are not blessed for such things. Go away. Your Jagannath story reminded me of this. Your Baba was called Jagannath.
What's the story of Rupazi's realization? What's the story of Rupazi's realization? I mean, he must have been given it by Sai Baba before he left the body, right?
Yeah.
Did he ever tell us a story about that? Getting him and climbing and filling that cave?
No, before that, you see, he got so desperate with life. He went, he was an Ayurved doctor formerly. He was Ayurved. And then he got that fancy, you see, to get rich. not because he wanted to become rich, but then he wanted to experiment, and he was in search of that touchstone that could give him gold.
Yeah.
He went in search of that. He tried to do all sorts of experiments and all that sort of thing. So from this, don't keep that gate open, otherwise it will break. So he tried to do that. And then eventually he got so desperate with all this. His wife died, and then he was married again, and she died and all that. And then in a search, desperate search, he was so desperate with all this that he said that what I will do is I'll throw myself in an abyss somewhere. So in a ditch, abyss. So there is that abyss there still in Nasik. He went there, yeah, in Nasik there. Meenu Bharuja knows sometimes, but it's such a place nobody can go there. So there are these sheer cliffs, you see. In between, he just threw himself there.
No, he really fell?
He threw himself there. He laid there for 6 months there like that, without food, without water. Yeah, he was. There's a picture of him, like a skeleton.
But he was unconscious.
Have you seen the picture? No,
I've seen a very thin picture when he was very thin. Right?
Very, very thin. Hardly. And then he felt great thirst, and immediately it rained, and he took water. And then people, some or other, then he started shouting out names. There will be these shepherds around. Mm-hmm. They thought that they are hearing some ghosts shouting out and all that. So they tried to peep in, and veritable ghost is there. Yes, there's somebody there who looks like a ghost.
Mm.
Then they spread rumors outside there that there is this, and some valiant people wanted to see what it's all about. They came, and then Maharaj said, "What are you looking at me like? Don't you want me to come out of this place?" They helped him out there.
In very deep, like 100-foot rock?
Yeah, it is very deep.
So it was like a suicide attempt?
Yeah, he wanted to commit suicide, but even that didn't allow him to drop his body. That's what he writes. He tells, and it has been written down. I wanted even to give up my ghost, but even that was not permitted because of my destiny. That's what he said.
And then from there he went to Sarvabhava.
Yeah, from there naturally. He wandered, and then he came to Sarvabhava.
But he wasn't realized probably until...
No, at that time, no. It's through Sai Baba. Baba says realization is not a ball of sweets to just eat it and swallow it and relish it. It's not that. It's terrible. What do you want?
Peace.
Long John. The tall person.
Everybody rushed to Baba, and you all had to make a circle and hold hands and keep people up.
But here, funny thing happened when Baba was taken. Here also, there was a crowd of over 100,000 people. It may be 300,000 people or so, 400,000. This old man that is standing behind Baba, you know, he is the saint of this country. He's known as Gaudiya Maharaj.
Is he the one that was in 1962 also?
That was another yogi. But here, he was, Gaudiya Maharaj was here in one of the films you see before, 54, Gwalior Park. There was a big darshan program there for Baba. So he had come. But then after that, he came to Baba here, wanting Baba to bless him so that now he can no longer pull on with the duty. His body is fatigued, so he wanted to be blessed so that he can have the release. He came here, this very door here, and petitioned to Baba and all that. Baba said, "No, you continue for some time. But how long? I'm tired of it." He says, "No, continue." He says, "Allow me, I will continue already. You don't want me to leave now. Allow me to sit at your door and keep watch." He says, "No, He says, I won't demand much food or ask for any more food than these people eat. I only want small piece of bread and just little vegetable. That's all that will suffice. Not like them, pointing at us who were sturdy and all that. Yeah. So then Baba smiled and says, no, no, you go back and do what you are doing now. I want you to continue with that. So then he says, you tell people that I am your one of your beloved children, and you don't listen to your beloved child. You don't want to hear me. Because I'm hearing you. What do you want? You want to release? Which I said, no. I want you to go back. He said, no, but there is one thing that I would like you to do for me. So what is it? On one condition, you ask me that you don't ask me to break my silence. He says, yes. What do you want? He says, I want you to come to the place, that same temple, you know, which is Pandharpur, Vithoba's temple. Come to Pandharpur, because at Pandharpur, twice a year they have a huge fair where hundreds of thousands of people from all over the country go there. Yeah. It's an auspicious occasion. So they assemble there on the banks of the river. There's no arrangement made, nothing, no arrangement whatsoever. And they go and take darshan of Baba, of Vithoba. That is, Baba himself in stone image. But this person had made his headquarters there. And he would, naturally people go all the year round on pilgrimage to that place. So whenever the pilgrims come, he would exhort them to... they would come there with their offerings and other things, you know, and they would say, this is not the way that you should approach the Lord. You come over here year after year, sometimes twice a year, sometimes six times a year they go. You wear out your souls, these souls, shoes souls or sandal souls and all that, and you come over here, of what avail is that? The true art of worship is quite different than this. There should be love in you and all that. He would exhort these people. And in one of his exhortations, he had promised them that there will come a day when I will bring you, come over here, and you try to wear out your souls to bow down at the idol, of, a stone idol of the Lord. But one day there will come a time when I will introduce you to him in flesh and blood. If you were to worship him the way he should be worshipped. So then he never told us anything about this. That's later on we came to know about it all. So then he told Baba that please come on a certain day. So then Baba accepted. And he went there. And it was a sight for the gods to see, you see, the way he received us, and he kept us for the whole day there. But in the night he took us on a mound of sand. Mound, the platform is there because all the congregation was there. Hundreds of thousands of people were there. It was all, no electricity or anything of the sort. But on the mound where Baba was made to sit, and we few were there with him, there was this carpet spread out, the ordinary plain carpet. And there he was made to sit. Then he stood up, and there were pressure lamps. And then he started singing devotional song that was famous of his. And then it was silence there prevailing. And then in the midst of that, he, after having sung one bhajan, he started exhorting them again. I had been telling you time and again about true worship and all that. And if you remember well, I had promised you to bring him in flesh and blood over here. And he's here today, and I've come to introduce him, you to him. And then he goes to Baba, gets him with his hand, and makes him stand there. And he says, here he is now.
Are you ready?
That was wonderful.
Are you
in
the place?
They could create nothing out of nothing.
Jack wants to prove this right now.
How are you going to prove it? Why don't you start proving it by paying me the 10 rupees you owe?
Is it 10 rupees you owe?
Okay.
What do you do?
What
do you
mean? He's going to create nothing.
What is
this? I said, Jack, I said 10 rupees, not a piece of paper.
Sure, piece of paper.
And then men will get fed up of all these things.
of technology.
Of technology and such gadgets. And they said a simple life is so sweet and so harmonious and so much contentment can be derived out of it. We have lost the art of knowing what contentment is, and that's why we have inherited fear.
I feel like in the West, there's so many conveniences. I mean,
but each convenience leads to another thing.
Inconvenience.
Yeah. I'm saying it, and people are so discontented. Yeah.
Just like that.
If money were all in all, and all that is needed, then the millionaire will not be so unhappy.
They're never satisfied.
Yeah, never satisfied. They want more and more. Just like there was a darwish, you may have heard it. And a king heard of him and thought that he would go there and pay his homage to him. And naturally, kings think of paying their homage in offering a platter full of precious stones or gold or something like that, you know, because that's what they treasure and possess. So when he offered that, he says, I don't want it. This is just a token of my homage. What will I do with those sort of things? Don't burden me with these things. If the others will help you, how will it help me? You can use it, you can spend it. I don't need to spend anything. It will need, you will need more of it. I love this. He's having. So then the dervish turned to him and says, no, you are the king of a certain kingdom. So yes, I am the king of a certain kingdom. Are you satisfied with it, or would you want to have the particular other kingdom you see that is against you? Would you like to have the possession of that kingdom? Sure, if I can get a chance, I'll do it. Well, then, are you satisfied with whatever you have got? He says, no, I would like to increase my kingdom. Then you are a greater beggar than I am. I don't need this. I don't even want, I don't even have a thought of increasing anything that I have got. And you, who have got so much and you want to have more of it, that means you are a greater beggar than I am. You know, Darwish means a beggar. Darwish who has nothing. But I have got everything by having nothing. So it's all how one takes it. If you are contented, then everything is at your beck and call. That's what we noticed also. But no sooner we run after something, that particular thing runs ahead of us. And we are always behind it. But when we just discard something, that particular thing that has been discarded runs after us. It's always a chase, one way or the other.
Do they ever meet up with each other?
Do they ever meet up?
No.
Only fairy tale.
They meet with each other only when one becomes perfect. When one realizes, not knows through understanding, but is convinced of being, that it is illusion, it's nothing, it's passing, then of course they join hands. And then he makes, that person makes the proper use of it, whatever he possesses and all that, with proper perspective, according to his innate knowledge that he gives, the infinite knowledge that he gives. Baba has always told us, you see, wealthy is he who knows how to spend his day well.
Excuse me, Irish. I can hear the end of it. How to spend his
wealth well.
Yeah.
Yeah. A person may be very wealthy and squandering his wealth. But a person may be just possessing just 10 rupees and spends it well. Suppose that there, he finds a mother who has just delivered the child, and he has that 10 rupees. And mother and the child are there, being famished there, nothing to do, and he just offers that, or spends that in getting milk and little food for the mother and milk for the child. So he is really wealthy, who can spend it well.
If we buy things that are, like, let's say, luxurious, like a very nice stereo, I mean, would you consider that spending money well on yourself?
Yeah.
Like some certain comforts?
Yeah. For us, it is on the rock. But there are others who think that it is just being extravagant. Because when you have a hi-fi, then you need something else, a color television. Then you have a television. Then you say, no, you have heard somebody saying that there is a color television. Oh, that's good. Then you say that, well, this television needs an antenna. But there is a neighbor who has a television set that doesn't have an antenna. So you go in for that. And you go in for all those, one after the other. It all depends upon how well we are stationed. Everything is perfect in its own way. You are spending it for your own luxury and your comfort is good. My not spending anything on anything of that sort is also good. Somebody spends something out of his income, you know, half of his income is spent in giving happiness to his children, you know. That is also good. Everything is perfect. There's nothing imperfect in us. But when we have the overall picture, we try to think about these things and try to go deep into it and try to find out whether all this is lasting. Children are made happy with certain toys. The same children will be unhappy with the same toys, you see, when they grow up. What happened to their happiness? Gone. At that particular moment, it's so good. So likewise, in our own setup that we are living now, at that moment it's good. Everything is perfect. When you grow older, then you seek for something else which is greater. It's like that. But at this stage that we have arrived at, now we are set to think, you see, of things. Is it good to have this? Is it not good to have this? No. This is a stage. It's a sort of a transition where you have to make decisions. What is good for you and what is lasting for you, and what is not good for you and what is ephemeral. Just not lasting. If you still persist in selecting that which is not good for you, and that which is just a passing show, nobody stops you. Go in for it. Another stage will come where it will make you sit down and think about it, and then you will want to discard it. It's not lasting. Something is better than that. So you go in for something better. And a stage will come when you discard that which is more sublime than all you can. And then you go on and on and on and on, and you discard everything. And eventually, you will not be able to discard the love let him come to you. What lasts? Even peace does not last. But love lasts, which knows no peace.
Erich, can you give some examples of how Baba helped his disciples discard material things from their lives? Or the attachment to them?
On one's own, it's almost impossible to discard. To be fair to nobody can do that. Because we are so attached to things. And it's necessary. And our mind is such that it tends to make us not aware that it is necessary. And it's not wrong. It is so right, so proper. Yeah. But when His grace descends, when He wants us, He just orders. No, do not have. And it's automatic. It just goes on. Yeah.
Would the desire leave immediately upon the same?
Yeah. Now I was entrenched in all the best of the things in the world. Myself. Everything was there for me. Anymore. And I don't know. Even today I don't know. If He had not ordered me, I would have still been stuck in what I was. All the best things in the world were there at my disposal at the time. Yeah. Good friends, good society, the best of my family, love, everything was there. Yeah. And not that I had a longing for God or anything of that sort, that I would want to discard and leave and all. No. Everything was so beautiful, it was such a fine setup. So it would be very difficult, you know, because everything was so rosy. Who would want to leave? But one command from Him, and our acceptance of the command is the other side of it, you see. There are two hands, so clap can be heard, the two hands come together, and hold is there. So He commands, and we accept the command. And that is the culmination of our lives. But He gives the capability. When He gives out the hand, the other hand automatically goes out. So that's how it is. So one can never say that there is a gradual progression in discarding things and all that, because the worldly material goods that we are possessing is impossible on our own to discard them. You'd want to have it time and again, time and again, knowing fully well, even an old shoe, you can't discard it. It will be of some use, let it be. Rainy days.
What about all the mental baggage?
That is another greater grace. After you discard the material, then you come, then you go ahead with the other thing. That's also by His name. And for that, one has to remain resigned to Him. Most important. One has to be determined to be His. Yes. There's no way out of it. After 40 years with Him, if I were to question myself and say that, why is it like that? Well, no sooner I put the question, why, that I am unable to discard all that I am supposed to discard. Well, it will be too presumptuous on my part to say why. But it will be a great, a sublime thing to just remain resigned to the always, whatever it is. Knowing fully well, I am aware of it all, but remaining resigned to His will is more sublime than to question. So that's why He has always told us, just play your part, you know, and just leave my business to me. You see to your own business. How you hold on to me. See to the grip that you have on my Dharma. And the rest I will give. Wherever I go, you will be with me. If you have a grip on me. Wherever I am, you will be with me. So our business is to have a firm grip on her. Just try that first, which takes many centuries. Oh God. Yes, it is over. It is. But those centuries can be put into a capsule. When you go on saying, oh God, all those centuries get concentrated and put in the capsule and swallow it once. So that is the saving grace. Yeah, it is a fact.
I have a question. How would you explain to someone the difference between drugs and alcohol? The